Meeting of the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee will come to order. Time is 1:10 on March 5th. Members present are Representative Tuck, Representative Rauscher, and myself, Co-Chair Shaw. Since we will be holding this bill, we can do without a quorum today. Please silence your cell phones. If anyone in the audience has any issues or concerns, please see our committee aide, Seth Witten. I'd like to thank our committee chair, Shannon McCain, committee secretary, Shannon McCain, and Amanda Kraft for teleconferencing. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 169, Occupational Licensing, Minimum Wage, Lobbying, sponsored by Representative Eastman. This is the first hearing on this bill. Here to present is the sponsor, Representative Eastman, and his staff, Nathan Simpson. Welcome. Could you please join us at the table, put yourself on the record, and proceed with your presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative David Eastman, House District 10.
For the record, Nathan Simpson, Office of Representative Eastman.
Please present your presentation. Thank you.
So I'm going to read the sponsor statement and then go through a sectional analysis, and would love to answer questions afterwards. HB 169 is a bill that waives initial occupational licensing fees for members of low-income families, veterans, and military members and their spouses. Because military families often have to move, and also the difficulties for low-income families, the licenses required for the jobs that they work or that they are trying to work, that initial fee can actually prevent them from doing the work that they've been training to do. And so this bill is meant to make it so that their initial entry into the workforce is much smoother and easier. They will have to renew their licenses afterward, of course, but it's just to remove the initial barrier. And oftentimes the transition from military life to civilian life can also be difficult, and so that is the idea of this bill, is to make that easier. And just trying to get rid of the initial fees, trying to get rid of the red tape, and trying to get more people into the workforce. Just for your information, the average fee for occupations in Alaska is about $400. That varies, of course. We don't actually have an actual range, but some fees I know do cost a couple thousand dollars, and some do only cost a couple hundred. There are about 45 of those occupations that are licensed in the state. I'd like to go to the sectional analysis now. This bill has 8 sections. The first section is requires the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to waive the fees for someone when they're doing their initial fee, as long as they meet the requirement in the next section. Section 2 is allows the fees to be waived for individual applicants' initial occupational licensing costs if they are low income, they are current or former member of the military, or they are the spouse of that said person. Section 3 prevents the denial of a license based upon an arrest that doesn't result in a conviction. It also allows an applicant to appeal denial for the license, and that is based upon the prior conviction of the applicant. Section 4 requires the department to issue an occupational license to an applicant that has completed at least up to 8th grade and has successfully completed an apprenticeship approved by the U.S. Department of Labor and passed the appropriate licensing examination. They have to be at least 18 years old and complete all necessary hours for the licensed training. Section 5 prevents municipalities from disregarding this law so that everyone in the state has that equal access. And same with Section 6, it prevents municipality from enacting or enforcing a minimum wage that differs from the state's minimum wage calculated in our statute. Section 7 prevents the municipality from enacting or enforcing laws or regulations that relate to this proposed legislation unless it was in place prior to legislation going into effect. So it's grandfathering language like we see in many other laws. The municipality is prohibited from hiring lobbyists as well that provide lobbying services for municipal licensing boards or agencies. And I think Section 8 just places new language in statute relating to applicability to lobbying that was dealt with in the prior section as well. Do you have any questions?
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the primary purpose of this is to offer a little bit of relief for those who are trying to get into trades or their professions. Can you explain Section 6 one more time? Because I would think that if a municipality wants to have their own little mini Davis Bacon Act, if you will, Prevailing Wage Act, and I'm an electrician by trade, have electricians making $2 more an hour than what the state has, if we're trying to offer relief and give these guys into good careers and everything else, why would we put this limitation in? And what's the purpose of this when it comes to occupation licensing?
So minimum wage is something that the state does enforce, and that is in our statute currently. And while it is not a frequent complaint that municipalities are changing that language, I think the original intent was that every Alaskan have that same minimum wage and that it be easy, I guess the ability to move from one part of the state to another part and have the same working conditions as far as minimum standards would be the same. So I think it's more for uniformity and to make sure that the minimum wage is not increased in such a way that it would be a disadvantage to some.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Please.
That's fine. It doesn't seem to deal with occupational licensing right now. And I would think that the goal is to get people in the higher paying jobs. And I don't know why you want to hold their wages down on that. But that's just my opinion.
I could respond to that. I think that's a fair question and concern. If they're in the jobs, then I think it's great to focus on having them to have a better job. I don't have any objection to that. But I think the purpose here is to make sure that they get into the job in the first place, because we're seeing barriers to entry, and if that municipality you're talking about has that higher minimum wage, that too would fall under a category of being a barrier to entry to someone who is trying brand new to enter that occupation, brand new to get that first license. So our target is not those who already have an occupational license and already have that career. The bill isn't really focused on them. It's focusing on how do we make it easier to get on that first rung of the ladder.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Representative Eastman, could you put yourself on the record, please?
I'll be glad to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative David Eastman and House District 10.
Thank you. Any other questions or follow-up, Representative Tuck?
Just a comment. I mean, if I was going to enter into a trade, I'd be looking at the wages to see if I really want to go into that trade. And I would say, man, if there's a barrier to – if there's anything a barrier, if it's holding back the wages, I'm not sure that I want to enter into that trade. So I'm not understanding why a higher pay would be a barrier to someone getting into a trade. But I think that's just a difference of opinion.
Any additional comments or questions? Representative Rauscher?
Yeah. So I was just wondering, through the chair, to the representative or his staff, how many people will the bill help? Do you have any idea? And is it is this a good solution?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, there is we currently have a request through Ledge Research to figure out how many people that are either in military families or spouses of, and also are low income that this would affect, and we don't have that back yet. But you want to say something else?
However, through the chair, what we do know is that here in our Alaska, we do have a significant military population and military families and dependents. We also know that statistically, nationally, those same military families and spouses, particularly of military service members, have a significant lower income than their counterparts in the private sector. And that has to do with a number of things, oftentimes attributed to the fact that they move and then have to apply for a new job, and that's going to be repeated several times over a 20-year, you know, military career. So that spouse and family members are at a disadvantage, and partly also because there's an expectation they might be moving again. That's a further disadvantage when they're looking to get that initial job. And so what we're looking at is, since they already have so many things stacked against them, how can we give them a fighting chance to get that first job? How can we make it so that what is, you know, currently we have much higher average occupational licensing costs in here in Alaska than nationally. Nationally, it's about $260. I think the Institute for Justice calculated for those initial occupational licenses here, it's much higher. And so what we're looking at is, how do we reduce those barriers to entry for those military spouses specifically?
And one follow-up question. Thank you for your answer. I appreciate it. What's the relationship between minimum wage and occupational licensing? How do they relate to each other?
Sure. Statistically, we know that if you are looking to create a job and hire a new person, if it is a lower income, so if you're in the vicinity of where a minimum wage would apply, you only have so much money. And if you have the opportunity to hire someone who is new to the profession, you would expect they probably have lower skills. And so you're not going to want to start them off at the top. You're going to want to start them off at a level that is appropriate to their skills and experience, and that's going to be very low. And that's just, you know, starting out in a new career. So the lower that ladder rung is, the lower that minimum wage is, the ability of that person at the very bottom to reach up and grab it is increased. And so the higher that minimum wage is, that makes it just a little bit further out of reach. And that may not apply to a lot of folks, but since we're talking to people at the very lowest part, they're stretching and they're jumping and they're trying to grab that lowest rung. And the higher we put that lowest rung, the fewer people can actually reach up and grab it.
All right, thank you very much.
Representative Eastman, I have a question. Is there a concern with occupational licensing requirements that might make a difference in folks coming on board to waive this fee? The requirements for the job relative to even getting the job. I don't know, maybe the nursing requirements, teaching requirements, electrician requirements in Oklahoma may be different than Alaska. Is that a concern to this bill?
That's not what we're addressing in this bill. I know it's been talked about in other legislation. Are the requirements appropriate? And I think that's an ongoing discussion, and there's changes that in technology whatnot that may necessitate changing those requirements. In some cases, those requirements may be a little bit too low, in some cases maybe a little bit too high. What we're really talking about is not changing the license or not having a license or making it harder or softer. It's just, since about half of all of the most common positions someone in a low income working environment would apply for, about half those careers do have occupational licensing requirements. Working at McDonald's doesn't, fortunately, but a lot of other things do. And so in the situations where they do apply, we want to make sure that we give everyone a chance to get that first license, get that first paycheck, and then they can demonstrate their skills, they can keep that job, and then having that renewal at a year or two later when they go to get that next license, they'll already have money in their pocket to do it. It's just the folks that don't have the job, don't have the paycheck, making sure that they can reach up and grab.
Thank you for that response. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And through the chair, when you say that it's not changing the requirements or changing, it looks like Section 4 does. It's adding a whole new section there for apprenticeship programs on what the minimum requirements are to get a license. And there's a under B there, line 29, there's a list of, I'm guessing, occupations that are exempted from this. Do you have a list of those occupations by any chance?
We can provide that to you, yeah.
Okay. Looks like a pretty extensive list because it goes four lines long.
Yes, okay. We'll be glad to provide it for you. And thank you very much for mentioning the apprenticeship program. We hadn't really gotten into that portion of it, but it does provide an opportunity for someone to get that initial license through having completed and being part of an apprenticeship program. And so in the sense that that was not, for some occupations, an opportunity before, that would have an effect of reducing that initial requirement to get that license, yes.
I'm sorry, if I may, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are you saying that Section 4 is added to reduce the requirement or to add a requirement? Because right now, I don't think that we have in statutes a requirement to have completed eighth grade. I don't think that we have a requirement for being 18 years of age or any of that stuff. So I'm not sure. I mean, it looks like a whole new section. It doesn't look like we're modifying anything, but it looks like we're making sure at least somebody has an eighth grade education at least.
So
is it like now at the high school, graduation from high school, and you're bringing down the eighth grade by reducing the barrier? I'm not seeing where there's any statutes that's being lined out or being eliminated, but this is actually adding a new section.
Can you speak to that? Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I believe that section is actually in reference to the waiver. The idea of this is to is if you are low income as well to qualify for the waiver, you will have had to gone through the apprenticeship program and be of 18 years of age, and also and have gone through the eighth grade. That's what the point of that section is, I believe.
If I could follow up on that, my understanding is that we are changing that initial requirement. And so to the extent that we are allowing people to reach out and use an apprenticeship program, there was concern that they might abuse that or people might not be qualified. And so these initial requirements of having completed the eighth grade and whatnot are meant to alleviate that concern, so that since they are going to be taking advantage or hopefully taking advantage of this new opportunity through apprenticeship, that there still be safeguards and that not be, not defeat the purpose of having the occupational license in the first place, I guess.
And just a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know what these other occupations are in here. I should have looked these up before coming in here. But I can tell you from the electrical industry, you are required to get an occupational license as an apprentice. And so they call it a certificate of fitness. I don't know why they call it a certificate of fitness. We're not PE teachers, but they call it a certificate of fitness through the Department of Labor. And so you can't even, unless you're in a registered program, get that certificate of apprenticeship. So by saying that you can't get an occupational license until you are graduated from an apprenticeship program, I don't know if that's the changes that you want to see in this, because when you're talking about apprenticeships, you're now going to Department of Labor more than you are Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, professional licensing. So I guess I'll just hold my questions until I get a list of the trades or occupations that are being exempted from this.
My only follow-up to that through the chair would be that if you have completed an approved apprenticeship program, the idea is that program is adequate to meet the initial licensing requirements, and so that an occupational license should be offered at that point. I guess the question could be asked, is that apprenticeship program, legit? Is it functioning the way it should? It would have to be an approved program. It's not just, something fly by night. But if that process is working as it should, and it's a legit apprenticeship program, and you have completed that and fulfilled these minimum requirements, then what we're asking for is that person should be granted that license.
And then if I may,
yes,
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, for example, if someone is already in an apprenticeship program right now and hasn't completed the eighth grade, then they would have to do what? Go back to school, eighth grade? If they're over 21, I don't think they can do that. Would there be a grandfather clause or anything that allows them to go ahead and continue in the career that they've entered into?
Thank you, through the chair. If and that's why it doesn't apply to all careers, certainly. And if you You don't have to have completed an apprenticeship program to get a license. This is just another way that you can go about getting a license is through apprenticeship. Certainly, there are many careers where either there is no apprenticeship program or you can just apply for the license to begin with. But what we're saying here is if you have completed such a program and it does apply to the license that you're applying for, then we're directing the state to grant that applicant the license unless there's some other mitigating factor.
Through the chair to Representative Tuck, I just want you to see that this isn't a this isn't saying that you can only get an occupational license if you follow through with this. It's saying that it requires a department, if the person has done these things, to issue the occupational license and be qualified for that waiver. Okay. So that was the purpose of that decision.
Thank you for the clarification. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Brief please.
Yes.
Okay.
Any additional comments? Any questions from the committee? Additional questions?
I got to ask for can I ask a question?
Yes.
Thanks. Through the chair to the representative maker of the amendment. I guess my question is, would you be willing to settle for a reduction, say a percentage reduction for those who may qualify instead of a total relief?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman. Yes, I think our goal is to make it easier for low-income and military folks to get that initial license, and anything we can do to reduce that barrier, I would be in support of, for certainly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any additional comments? Okay, next we have testimony online from Anchorage. First, I'd like to go to Bethany Markham, Executive Director of the Alaska Policy Forum. Ms. Markham, are you online?
I am. Thank
yes,
you.
If you'd like to go on record, please, and state your affiliation.
Yes, Bethany Markham, M-A-R-C-U-M, with Alaska Policy Forum. Chairman Shaw and members of the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. House Bill 169 contains multiple components, many of which relate in various ways to occupational licensing, and as such, I'd like to provide some background on this practice and point to some recent studies that are relevant to the topic. As early as the 1950s, very few U.S. workers were covered by state occupational licensing laws, but by the year 2000, studies found that 20% or more of workers were subject to these laws. One of the common reasons given for growth of occupational licensing is a desire for consumer protection from fraud and poor quality service. Consumers, it is claimed, want the protection that occupational licensing brings. The claim, in other words, is that consumers want to be sure that the people working in a given field are qualified. But as pointed out by a Hoover Institution economist recently, there are virtually no examples where consumers were the driving force for creating occupational licenses. Further, a recent study conducted by a Stanford University economist jointly with academics from Boston University, MIT, and Harvard found that consumers really don't care about licenses. Instead, today, consumers rely upon other factors like customer ratings and reviews. The other common justification given for occupational licensing is health and safety. To that, there is definitely some merit. Specific jobs certainly warrant some degree of oversight to protect the health and safety of both workers and consumers. But there is more to unpack here. First, licensing is only one type of oversight that government can employ to protect health and safety, and it is generally the most onerous. There are many other interventions that government controls which can protect health and safety, and in fact, these are used in other non-licensed industries. These would be examples like random inspections, bonding, certification, and registration. All of these are less burdensome than licensing. Additionally, while it sounds good in theory, the data shows that licensing doesn't necessarily protect health and safety in the real world. In the words of Brookings Institute scholars, evidence of safety improvements caused by licensure is very difficult to find. So if licensing has only negligible effects on health and safety, and consumers don't really care about it, what does it do? Well, the clearest result is that it restricts employment opportunities. Multiple bodies of research find that employment growth is consistently lower in places where occupations are strictly licensed. Beyond the vocational requirements for licensing, states have created another hurdle, the cost to become licensed. The higher the cost, the fewer individuals who can afford to make that employment shift, even if they are perfectly qualified. If Alaskans are trying to climb the economic ladder, sometimes they cannot afford the initial fees required to get a license. A policy reform which waives initial fees is good practice. This would allow them to enter the career field and begin earning income to take them up the economic ladder. When veterans leave full-time military service, sometimes their military experience and job translates directly into civilian careers, but in plenty of cases, that doesn't work. In my personal case, I worked in military operational intelligence. That's a very hard career to convert into civilian life. Many veterans need to find new career fields, but they are hindered by expensive licensing fees. Any policy reforms that the legislature can make to reduce licensing burdens, including waiving initial fees and allowing paid apprenticeships in lieu of costly classroom training, will result in more Alaskans being able to find gainful employment. I encourage the committee to embrace policies that give Alaskans opportunities to make better lives for themselves. Thank you for the chance to testify on this important issue.
Thank you, Ms. Markham. Do any committee members have any questions for Ms. Markham? I see none. Ms. Markham, if you just stay on the line, if we have any additional questions that may come up, we'd appreciate it. Next, we have invited testimony from Hallie Hollick from the Foundation of Government Accountability. If you could identify yourself and your affiliation, please proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you. Haley Hollick, Foundation for Government Accountability. And just to make sure, I'm all the way in Texas, so can you all hear me?
Yeah, we all can hear you.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. As I said, my name is Haley Hollick. I'm a senior fellow at the Foundation for Government Accountability. And FGA is a nonprofit organization that develops policy solutions to advance the power of work and empower people to create their American dream. And HB 169 will do just that. I don't want to be redundant here, but I do want to lay out and align why this licensing fee waiver is important. And I also want to focus on the apprenticeships as well. I'm going to share some information, some of which I don't think has been shared. Military families and those trying to lift themselves out of government dependency should not have to pay the government to work. And that's what this bill does. It'll make it easier for the most deserving to get back into the workforce. As my colleague mentioned earlier, over a quarter of full-time employees in the U.S. require a license to lawfully work in their occupation. And the upfront investment to obtain that government permission slip to work can cost hundreds of days in training and thousands of dollars in education. And as significant as these barriers are for most Americans, for anyone, military families and low-income families feel this burden more than others. For military families who have little to no choice in relocation, starting over is a way of life. And military spouses are 10 times more likely to move compared to their civilian counterparts. And this creates obstacles to finding employment for those tens of thousands of spouses who work in licensed or certified occupations. And so that's how we arrive at HB 169, because one of the obstacles in an occupational license, one of the obstacles, to obtaining employment is occupational licensing fees, because recurring moves means recurring renewal. HB 169 answers this financial hardship with this common sense policy that waives the first-time licensing costs for veterans, active service members, and their spouses. But to be sure, these aren't exclusive to higher-income jobs. I believe that it was mentioned earlier that the average licensing fees are somewhere around $400 in Alaska. But just among the lower-income occupations, just lower-income ones, that the average licensing fee in Alaska is $298. And this is a lot of money, especially for low-income families that could put this money towards groceries or bills. And HB 169 answers this by applying to applicants who live under the federal poverty line. And so this bill is designed to work for those who are working toward the path of self-sufficiency, because the government shouldn't profit from people who are trying to pull themselves out of government dependency. And finally, I want to end with focusing on the apprenticeships. This bill is also good for workers because those who complete an apprenticeship earn higher starting wages and experience a higher employment rate compared to workers who enter a field without an apprenticeship. And most of us learn best by doing. And HB 169 takes this principle and puts it into practice by allowing those workers who have completed an apprenticeship to obtain a relevant license, so long as they meet other training requirements. And so that creates a win-win-win, because workers can gain on-the-job experience, take home a paycheck, and also build towards a meaningful career. Thank you for your time today, and I just want to mention I have been to Alaska before. I loved it. It was during the summer, and I think it was creepy to see the sun never really go down. So we have a lovely state there.
Thank you, Ms. Hollick, and we appreciate y'all coming on board and providing testimony and coming to a much larger state to vacation. Thank you, and if you'd please stay online just in case we have any additional comments, we'd appreciate it. We also have Sarah Chambers from the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing with us to answer any questions that may come about. Any questions from the committee that you would like to hear from?
I have actually another one for the bill sponsor, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Please.
That section, just going back to that section four again, I don't see the relationship between fees being waived and this requirement. I see this as a whole new section. So it looks like to me it was drafted wrong. If your intent was that you didn't get the fees waived unless you went through this apprenticeship program.
Thank you. And yes, I apologize for the confusion on that. This is Representative Eastman. And Section 4 is separate. If this bill were to pass, there would be a waiver of initial fees, and that is distinctly different from granting the occupation itself, the license. Section 4 deals only with what the minimum requirements are to instruct the state to grant that initial license. So if you check all the blocks under the apprenticeship program, you've passed that approved program, you've completed the eighth grade, you're at least 18 years of age and so forth, then we are directing the state to give you the license. It's kind of like non-optional at that point, unless you've violated some other requirement. So since we are doing that, that allows someone to get to the point of getting that license, and then hopefully, since it's their first license, they would also qualify to have that fee waived. Now, if they're going through an apprenticeship program and they're a millionaire, then they don't really need their fee waived, so they wouldn't qualify under that.
If I may, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So if they're a millionaire, how do we determine that? So where they would not be able to get their fee waived?
If they were a millionaire and a veteran, okay, different situation, because we're trying to help all veterans and veteran spouses. But you can be low income and not have had a career and not have joined the military and still qualify for the fee waiver. So this is granting the fee waiver to veterans and those serving the military, their spouses, as well as those who are on the low income side of the economic spectrum. And then separate from that, if they haven't gotten a license yet, then and they go through all the steps to get that first license through an apprenticeship program, then they can do so. And that would be an avenue, opportunity open to them. But we do specify there, as you pointed out in Section B, that option is not available for a number of occupations.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any additional follow-up?
Well, just one, and I believe that we agree that Section 4 is a new minimum requirement for apprenticeships. It's a new minimum requirement.
Yes, it's a new minimum requirement.
It's not conditional on whether they get the fee waiver or not.
It's not conditional on the fee waiver, and it doesn't, this doesn't eliminate current apprenticeship programs or anything like that. But it's saying if you want to come at it from this side of things, if you don't just want to go to the board and apply for a license and possibly be rejected, then you can go through this route, and then you'll be accepted to have that license.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, just the follow-up through the chair to Representative Tuck. The idea of this bill, of course, is just like because of this committee, it's for military families. It's also for low income. The idea is if someone has done all these things, the department has to issue the occupational license. And it's just making sure that the department has no excuse once this person has done all of these things to issue that. And sometimes it's people who have only, you know, haven't been able to get their diploma through high school and are low income would probably get the waiver as well. And it's just that's the group of people that we're trying to organize, get this bill towards. You know, that's who we're trying to. Yeah.
If I may, Mr. Chair. So I think we're mixing things up.
Yeah.
I don't see this apprenticeship section 4 conditional on a waiver.
Yep.
Okay.
That's correct.
So low income, doesn't matter what income you have, everybody has to follow section 4 if you're going into an occupational license with these exemptions that deals with apprenticeship program. There's no income, there's no military, non-military. To me, that's a standalone section that's brand new to statutes.
Yeah.
Thank you. And again, apologies for the confusion here. Any apprenticeship program can take place outside of the requirement in section 4. I can complete an apprenticeship, like you're saying, as an electrician, and I can grab my license just a normal way. What we're saying here is if we're going to direct the state to grant that license kind of without giving them discretion, then here are the requirements that have to be met. So you can go about it the normal way if you never completed the eighth grade, but if you're going to take advantage of this opportunity, you will have to have completed the eighth grade and some other requirements.
Okay, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
I just need to show me in the bill where it refers to this. Maybe it's this section right here. I'm guessing. In your first page, line 7, except for provided through F through M, but I don't see this falling into that F through M, the section 4. So I'll just have to figure that out for myself. But it doesn't look like that's tied to the fee waiver.
Yes, it's separate sections. It's not tied to the fee waiver, but you could be in a situation where you took advantage of both, and we're hoping that somebody would take advantage of both.
So may I ask another question?
Please.
Thank you. So does Section 4 apply to those who are not seeking a fee waiver?
Yes.
Okay. So that is a brand new section adding new minimum requirements. Okay. Thank you.
And I think any time we can come up with something that benefits military members and their spouses in any fashion, we should view this type of legislation proactively. It's pretty important to our veterans and our military families to be in a place of employment, and as they transfer around, that we try to actually benefit them in some way. So a good bill. Any other questions? At this time, it's my intent to hold House Bill 169. Thanks to the bill's sponsor and all testifiers for today's presentation. Seeing no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 2:50 p.m.